This is VOA News. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Venezuela's opposition leader, Juan Guaido, said Thursday that security forces showed up at his wife's apartment in Caracas in an effort to intimidate him. We get more details from Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener.
Guaido says police asked for his wife, who was at home with their baby. At the end of the event, Guaido warned police, quote, "I will hold you responsible for any threat to my baby." The political fight between Guaido and President Nicolas Maduro, sworn in for a disputed second term this month, has drawn in foreign powers on both sides. The United States, which backs Guaido, has warned of serious consequences if Maduro's government harms him. In another major show of support, the European Parliament Thursday voted in favor of recognizing Guaido as Venezuela's de facto head of state and urged the bloc's 28 governments to follow suit.
Jillian Kitchener of Reuters. U.S. President Donald Trump expressed optimism on reaching a large trade deal with China. Speaking at the White House Thursday, the president said he is confident that he can work out what he called a very big deal with Beijing.
I think the relationship that we have right now with China has never been so advanced. I don't think it's ever been better, but I can tell you for a fact it's never been so advanced, and certainly a deal has never been so advanced.
The president met with a Chinese delegation led by Vice Premier Liu He at the White House on Thursday. An interpreter read a letter to Trump from Chinese President Xi Jinping, which said relations are at a critically important stage between the two economic superpowers. The comments came on the last day of a second round of negotiations aimed at resolving the ongoing trade war between the two largest economies in the world. This is VOA News. Both President Donald Trump and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi are digging in on their positions about a southern border wall, leading to some doubts about whether a bipartisan congressional team can reach a compromise that would avoid another government shutdown. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Meghani reports.
As bipartisan negotiators work on a border security funding plan, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is ruling out any money for the president's border wall, but suggests she'd be open to vehicle barriers.
If the president wants to call that a wall, he can call it a wall.
He's digging in, too.
If they're not going to give money for the wall, it's not going to work. And if it's not going to work, then the politicians are really wasting a lot of time.
Saying Pelosi is playing games. Her hardline move could push the president toward using emergency powers to unilaterally build the wall, though even some Republicans are urging him not to. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
The U.S. Customs and Border Protection announced Thursday their biggest fentanyl bust ever, saying they captured nearly 114 kilograms of the synthetic drug in a secret compartment inside a load of Mexican produce headed to Arizona. Nogales CBP Port Director Michael Humphrey said the drug was found hidden Saturday morning in a compartment under the rear floor of a tractor trailer hauling cucumbers.
With a weight of nearly 254 pounds and an estimated value of $3.5 million. This represents the largest fentanyl seizure in CBP history.
Humphrey said agents also seized nearly 179 kilograms of methamphetamine. Europe has set up a mechanism to keep trading with Iran despite U.S. sanctions. Reuters correspondent Lucy Fielder tells us how.
The EU has set up a workaround that skirts U.S. sanctions and allows some trade with Iran, despite U.S. pressure on its European allies to cease all such business. The move could also help keep alive the flailing joint 2015 nuclear deal. France, Germany and Britain were key negotiators to what was seen as a huge EU foreign policy achievement. They opposed US President Donald Trump's decision to pull out last year. The risks of breaching US sanctions have put European companies off the big deals with Iran they once hoped for. And while Iran has welcomed this latest step, diplomats say it'll bring little relief to its sanctions-hit economy.
Lucy Fielder of Reuters. And officials say as many as 12 people in the United States have died this week due to record low winter temperatures that have made even quick trips outside dangerous. Mail service, air service, trains, and buses were suspended in the past 2 days in the Midwest in deference to the weather. For more, visit our website. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Friday, February 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. East African community leaders are meeting today in Arusha, Tanzania, but will Burundi's president be in attendance?
The extraordinary summit can help to find solution to resolve the issue between the Republic of Burundi and the Republic of Rwanda. I think this will be a good opportunity to the head of state to understand the real issue and thereafter advise accordingly.
Isabel Ndahayo is Burundi's East African Community Minister. Sudan's president says elections are the only means to bring about political change. There are new concerns South Sudan's former warring parties may be building up their fighting forces. And the President George Weah illegally appointed Liberia's new ambassador to the United States.
According to our Rules 55, Section 6, the President of the Republic of Liberia has the right to appoint what the Senate is in reason. And this is what the President has done.
Senator Saad Joseph is a member of the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee, and researchers look for a long-lasting Ebola vaccine. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports in our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. East African community leaders are meeting today in the northern Tanzanian city of Arusha. Deteriorating relations between Burundi and Rwanda are expected to top the agenda. The summit was postponed twice, last November and December, due to lack of quorum caused by the absence of Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza. As Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura, President Nkurunziza will again not be attending today's meeting.
On 30th November last year, the East African Community Heads of State Summit was suspended because Burundi's move to boycott the summit, citing that the rules of procedure were violated after the country called for the summit to be suspended to a later date. Today, Burundi sent a delegation to Arusha, which is led by the country's vice president. Among the items expected to be on the agenda is the Rwanda-Burundi relation, as Nkurunziza's government called for an extraordinary summit. Isabel Ndahayo is the Burundi East African Community Minister.
The extraordinary summit can help to find solution to resolve the issue between the Republic of Burundi and the Republic of Rwanda. I think this will be a good opportunity to the head of state to understand the real issue and thereafter advise accordingly.
Burundi and Rwanda relations deteriorated since 2015 when the incumbent president Pierre Nkurunziza vied for another term in the office. Rwanda accuses Burundi of sheltering the FDLR rebels who are accused of committing the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. And Burundi accuses Rwanda of plotting the 2015 failed coup to oust President Pierre Nkurunziza's government. Burundi's opposition leader Agathon Rwasa says the conflict is only between the two leaders.
This is a problem that can be solved diplomatically. After all, I don't see any court in the region, even internationally, which will be able to set this conflict of these two countries. I may even say that this is not a conflict between the two countries. It is a conflict between the heads of these two countries.
Apart from the Rwanda-Burundi relation being part of the agenda of the summit, the report from the facilitator and the former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa is expected to be discussed as the Burundi government boycotted the last round of talks, saying it will not talk to those involved in the 2015 failed coup. Burundi's opposition leader and the deputy speaker of the parliament, Agathon Rwasa, called on the East African community to conduct a 2020 election roadmap towards the free and fair elections, as he says that the country's electoral commission was appointed without including the opposition members.
With regard to 2020, it is still a mystery. What will happen? How could we be satisfied when we are not associated in the way this commission was set up? We cannot, and we cannot trust that one, because it is appointed for a purpose of those who appointed them.
There were speculations that President Pierre Nkurunziza would attend the summit, but those rumors have been proven wrong after his vice president confirmed to represent him in Arusha. President Pierre Nkurunziza has not attended the meeting since May 2015 after the attempted coup. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir declared on Thursday that he is reopening Sudan's border with Eritrea, which has been closed for nearly a year due to political friction. Bashir also acknowledged that the country's six-week-old protest movement has put him under serious pressure. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
As protesters demonstrated in parts of the Sudanese capital of Khartoum on Thursday, President Omar al-Bashir visited the northeastern state of Kassala, announcing that the border between neighboring Eritrea and Sudan would be reopened after a year of closure. He says that he greets the people of Eritrea and its president, and he proclaims that the border between the two countries is now open because they are our dear brethren, despite the fact that politics has caused division among us. He went on to tell supporters that it was the duty of the government to have a dialogue with young people and that the government must educate them and provide for their needs. He insisted, however, that any political change will only take place through elections. He says that there will be no change of government or of the president via Facebook or WhatsApp, and vows that change will only take place at the ballot box. Sudan's Association of Trade Unions called for another day of protest against the government Thursday, prompting a number of demonstrations in Khartoum and other parts of the country. The group's spokesman, Mohamed Asbat, told Al-Hora TV that the government's appeal for dialogue with young people and the release of prisoners is not sincere. Asbat says that the government's message that it is releasing prisoners and undertaking dialogue is intended for the consumption of outside countries who have been warning it not to arrest peaceful protesters and to release them. Opposition leader Miriam Sadiq al-Mahdi, who was briefly detained by Sudanese security forces Wednesday, told Al-Hora TV that the government's efforts at dialogue have failed and that in the face of a growing revolution, it has resorted to arresting young people. She says that President Bashir's round of visits to far-flung provinces does not reflect any desire on the part of the Sudanese people that he remain in power, and that it is normal for dictators to draw their supporters around them to make it look like they are popular. Sudan's intelligence chief, General Salah Ghosh, has met with a number of young protesters who have been jailed for taking part in demonstrations, but opposition leaders say that he and the government have released very few prisoners out of the several thousand they say are being detained. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, the body tasked with overseeing implementation of South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement, is expressing concern over what it calls military buildup in Ye River State. The spokesperson for the government and the opposition forces have denied their forces are preparing for confrontation. Wake Saima Wudu reports from Juba.
Thompson Fontaine, the Deputy Chief of Staff for Strategy at the Revitalized Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, said in a statement the peace monitoring body had received various reports of military build-up by both sides in Yeye River State and Koldi Forest Twin.
The process made so far in terms of the cessation of hostilities agreement of December 2017 and a revitalized agreement on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan of September 2018 is a worthy achievement and should not in any way be looked on lightly by any party.
Fontaine says JMEC believes the implementation of the ceasefire agreement is largely holding across the country. He says the silencing of guns continues to be a high priority. Fontaine is urging all parties to support the IGAD-led diplomatic process and allow the full implementation of the peace agreement to take shape. In a separate development, IGAD's special envoy to South Sudan, Ismail Weiss, issued a statement expressing concerns about the deal's implementation and indicating the parties are not respecting the peace agreement. Yei River State has been one of the hardest hit areas of Equatoria since the conflict spread to the area in 2016. Several armed groups have claimed control of parts of the state. Thousands of area civilians have fled to refugee camps in northern Uganda. Brigadier General Santo Domich, deputy spokesman of the South Sudan People's Defense Force, flatly denies government forces are preparing to fight armed opposition groups in the area.
Up to now, we don't have any information about forces building up hostilities here and there. Our forces are just in their normal defensive positions as it used to be.
SPLAIO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampol Gabriel also denies his group is involved in any military build-up and criticized JMEC for always blaming the SPLAIO for such activities.
When you highlight something, you point out clearly that we know the SSPDF is there, we know the SPLAIO is doing ABCD, and we know NAS is doing ABCD. But in most cases, it is only the SPLAIO, the SSPDF being blamed.
Efforts to reach NAS spokesman Samuel Soba for comment on this story were unsuccessful. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 1st. Please send your comments and opinions to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Let's send shout out to listeners on all our affiliate stations around Africa. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. The Liberian Senate voted yesterday to recall the country's new ambassador to the United States because some say Ambassador George Patton's appointment by President George Weah, as well as his commissioning, were illegal. Ambassador Patton was commissioned last December by President Weah and presented his letters of credence to U.S. President Donald Trump last month. The Senate said the ambassador's appointment and commissioning were illegal because he was not confirmed by the full Senate. But Senator Saad Joseph, a member of the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee, says President Weah acted legally when he appointed Ambassador Patton.
A report was placed on the floor based on a communication from one of our colleagues, a member of the Senate. There was a concern from some senators, but according to our rules 55 section 6 says the President of the Republic of Liberia has the right to appoint while the Senate is in recess. And then after adjournment of our recess, the President of the Republic of Liberia will communicate with the Liberian Senate. And this is what the President has done. So what was happening basically was to also read the rules to some of our colleagues so that they can be able to understand it and follow the procedures.
Senator, if I hear you correctly, you agree with the decision taken by President George Weah to appoint Ambassador Patton, but according to the vote that was taken Thursday, it was a vote to not confirm the ambassador, saying that the ambassador's appointment by President George Weah was illegal. Do you agree with that?
No, I disagree with that. That was not the vote taken. The vote taken today was to invite the ambassador. The Liberian Senate have the right to invite any government officials based on the oversight responsibility. So the Liberian ambassador accredited to the United States have been invited by the Liberian Senate. It's not a vote stating that the president was wrong. The president has the right, according to our rules, the president has the right to make appointment while we are in recess, and he communicates with us after our recess. That exactly the president has done.
The ambassador came to Washington and presented his letters of credence to President Donald Trump. That is without him being confirmed by the Liberian Senate.
It was also done in consultation with the Committee on Foreign Affairs, because we were in recess, and when the appointment was made, taking his letter to the United States was based on consultation, number one, with the Committee on Foreign Affairs, and also based on Rules 55 or Section 6.
So, Senator, you do not believe that President George Weah disregarded the rules of the Senate
No, President, the President of the Republic of Liberia have the right to appoint any government official, both in the executive and judiciary branch of government, while the session is in recess. He has the authority.
Senator, what is the likelihood that Ambassador Patton will be confirmed by the full Senate?
I can say the ambassador has been invited, his documents and credentials have been presented, and the Committee on Foreign Affairs have the right to invite any ambassador, and this is what he's being invited to do. He's been called upon with an invitation given him. So that was the discussion that the Committee on Foreign Affairs reported.
Senator Sir Joseph, thank you. It's so nice to talk with you.
You are welcome, and thank you so much.
Senator Sir Joseph is a member of Liberia's Senate Foreign Affairs Committee. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. More than 700 people have been sickened with Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and of those, more than 400 have died. The neighboring countries of South Sudan and Rwanda are bracing for the virus to spread. But half a world away, U.S. researchers are racing to develop a new, long-lasting vaccine against the virus. VOA's Carol Pearson has more.
In Congo, Ebola claims the lives of 60% of those who get the virus. The disease is so feared that even those who survive it are shunned.
Really makes it frightening is the high mortality rate, the very severe symptoms that people experience, and you know the fact that it comes up when not expected.
Dr. Paul Spearman is the lead investigator of a clinical trial that's testing two experimental Ebola vaccines at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center in Ohio.
We're giving one vaccine and followed 1 week later by another vaccine, and that could give you very rapid protection.
If this vaccine combination proves effective, it could be used in African countries wherever Ebola breaks out.
These epidemics that occur in several parts of Africa can arise without warning.
The vaccines don't contain the Ebola virus, but they produce a major Ebola virus protein that's designed to get the immune system to react. The study participants are all volunteers. Like Christy Keller, they're aware of the health and humanitarian crisis Ebola causes.
With research, through research, to stop it or prevent it, or make it so that it's not something that grows rapidly or spreads rapidly, then I think being a part of something like that is worth it.
In the laboratories at Cincinnati Children's, researchers test the volunteers' blood samples, which are collected before getting injected with the experimental vaccines and also afterwards. The goal is to produce a vaccine that is both effective and long-lasting and safe. Carnell Singh leads the sample testing in his lab at Cincinnati Children's.
We have baseline after 1 week, after 2 weeks, and we compare the three and then see what difference vaccination makes.
Another vaccine is being used in the outbreak in Congo. Developing effective vaccines that protect against Ebola for a long time is a top global public health priority. The researchers in Cincinnati hope their work will improve the understanding of how to build immunity to other viruses or bacteria that can cause disease. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the draws for the qualifiers of the Total African Nations Championship CHAN Ethiopia 2020, designed exclusively for footballers playing in their domestic leagues. The draws was held at the CAF headquarters in Cairo, Egypt, on the sidelines of the organizing committee of the competition. 47 teams are engaged in the battle for 15 places to join host Ethiopia for the final tournament of the 6th edition of the tournament. Staying with CAF competition, the 21st edition of the African Under-20 Cup of Nations is set to kick off in Niger Republic from Saturday the 2nd of February 2019. Head coach of Nigeria's Flying Eagles, Paul Ayebogun, speaking to journalists shortly after the team's final training session in Abuja, expressed confidence in the ability of the players to perform at a continental showpiece. Super Eagles head coach Gernot Rohr has said he will be encouraged to invite any player from the under-20 national team that impresses at the African Championship, which begins tomorrow. And now to Ghana, where Ghana League Clubs Association Chairman Kujo Fiano has announced that he will run for the Ghana Football Association presidency. The former Ashanti Gold chief is the latest high-profile personality to declare his intention to contest for the top job. Fiano, who has vast experience in football administration, says he wants to raise the profile of Ghana football, hence his decision to contest for the top football position in Ghana.
Our team that qualify for Africa shouldn't just go and roll through and come back home. And we want to see the days of the Accra Suffolk, the day Suffolk and Kotoko played in the Confederation Cup finals. My vision is to bring sanity into the game and let people have that trust in our game.
And to East Africa, where Athletics Kenya has intensified the fight against doping amongst Kenya athletes after the local federation formed a Kenya Doctors Network aimed at dealing with athletes with health conditions. Jackson Tui is president of Athletics Kenya.
If you are going to run abroad and you have a problem, a medical problem, as you go to the doctor there, make sure that you contact one of the doctors in the Kenya Doctors Network here in Kenya, so that your record is taken and everybody knows what your ailment is and what drugs you have been given.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington. Do have a good weekend.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend, and we look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. East African community leaders are meeting today in the northern Tanzanian city of Arusha. Deteriorating relations between Burundi and Rwanda are expected to be to top the agenda. The summit was postponed twice, last November and December, due to lack of quorum caused by the absence of Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza. President Nkurunziza will again not be attending today's meeting. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir declared on Thursday that he is reopening Sudan's borders with Eritrea, which has been closed for nearly a year due to political friction. Bashir also acknowledged that the country's six-week-old protest movement has put him under serious pressure. The Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, the body tasked with overseeing implementation of South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement, is expressing concern over what it calls military buildup in Ye River State. The spokespersons for the government and opposition forces have denied that their forces are preparing for confrontation. And the Liberian Senate voted yesterday to recall the country's new ambassador to the United States because some say Ambassador George Patton's appointment by President George Weah, as well as his commissioning, were illegal. Ambassador Patton was commissioned last December by President Weah and presented his letters of credence to U.S. President Donald Trump last month. The Senate said the ambassador's appointment and commissioning were illegal because he was not confirmed by the full Senate. But a senator, Senator Saad Joseph, said a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee said President Weah acted legally when he appointed the new ambassador. And that is it for this Friday, February 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer David Vandy, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
Do you love music from Africa and the world? VOA has the latest hits, interviews with the artists, and we are glad to take your requests. The Voice of America has what you're looking for. We have music shows to please everyone. Join us on the radio or on the internet to listen day or night. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on your favorite program. Just follow your ears. Music from Africa and the world. We've got it on VOA.